This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 6:15 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Sharmila. It is International Women's Day today and we are doing stories in line with that. So for our next one, 33 women MPs have urged their male colleagues to participate in upholding a more gender-sensitive parliament, with the Prime Minister stating that empowering women will continue to be an important national agenda. So we want to take this opportunity to look at a couple of things. Firstly, how has the government's progression on women's rights actually been like? A report card of sorts. And also to look at what it would take to create that more gender-sensitive parliament.
Yeah, so the MPs that have gotten together, and they are across the board, right? Not just aligned to one particular party. They've said that a gender-sensitive parliament has the potential to achieve gender equality and therefore fulfill a genuinely democratic system. And they listed six strategies, just to run through them really quickly. They talked about prioritizing bills and policies that lead to gender equality, to conduct debates that reflect the sensitivity of gender issues, to evaluate the options to the option to reform the electoral system so that there's more balanced gender representation in parliament, and to designate budgets that are receptive to gender needs across ministries, to create gender equality in the execution of the special select committee program in the parliament, and finally to consider gender needs when developing infrastructure and policies for parliament, as well as when it comes to civil servants that are working with the MPs. So a fair number of things that encompass a whole lot of recommendations that I think go beyond just parliament and get to the heart of how the place of women and women's rights in our country in general.
Yeah, in policy and in policy making, right, as well as in involvement, because I think the argument that's being made here is that it all has to happen all at once, essentially, that you have to push for more involvement and empowerment at a parliamentary level and then all the way through, so that you do get to see these sorts of decisions being made with this lens and with this focus. So we are going to be talking about that, as well as really looking at this idea of the government being committed to female empowerment and how that has played out in terms of the policies that are out there. You can let us know what you think. What do you make of this move? Again, 33 women MPs are looking to uphold a more gender-sensitive parliament in order to push forward gender equality in Malaysia, essentially. What do you make of it? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We are now crossing over, though, to Tam Swe Wei, who is the campaign manager at the 111 Initiative. Swe Wei, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So firstly, could you perhaps break down for us what a gender-sensitive parliament could look like?
Yeah, so I think earlier Sharmila pointed out the six strategies that the MPs have brought up. And I think that's those are really good strategies and a really good framework to basically look at. But essentially, a gender-sensitive parliament is one that should meet the needs and interests of everyone in parliament in terms of the structure, the way the operations work, and the culture and things like that, right? So I would highlight a few things that I think that a gender-sensitive parliament in Malaysia could look like. Is one, of course, we need to continue promoting for equality in numbers of women and men across all our bodies and internal structures, not just in terms of who's tabling bills in parliament, but also administrative-wise. And of course, another thing that we see is that we need to continue fostering an internal culture that respects women's rights and responds to the needs and realities of MPs. So we need to see that our parliament recognizes that the importance of balancing work and family responsibilities, and we do not tolerate sexist comments in the parliament. And I think most importantly is that a gender-sensitive parliament would also put more resources into equipping not just our MPs, but also parliamentary staff with ways of retaining our women to senior positions in decision-making, and just ensuring that gender equality is normalized throughout the work of our parliamentary administration.
So where are we at currently in terms of the men-to-women ratio in parliament? What are your thoughts on what this means?
Definitely at this moment, we don't reach that standard of 30% quota that we actually imposed on ourselves. And I think that we can definitely platform so much more women and other voices in our parliament. And I think this is just a continuous battle that we have as we, you know, break down the barriers of the perceptions that women are more involved in care work and how leadership is often seen as a male domain and just general gatekeeping of male-dominated party leadership. I think that's part of why we don't see more women in our parliament.
So with, you know, those being some of the barriers, then what concrete steps are being taken to try and address that?
I think the most recent update that we've seen is that there's been a push for this thing called TWOAS, which is the top up women only additional seats that is being pushed in the Penang State Legislative Assembly, where, you know, for the Aduns in the state assembly, when there isn't 30% women, parties can actually nominate to balance out that number. So that's, I would say, that's one measure of trying to have more women in decision-making spaces. But of course, you know, this in itself is not even a new idea to begin with. It's been done in other states like Terengganu as well. But of course, this is just a temporary measure and not a long-term solution. With 111 initiative, we do advocate for the need to actually continuously build the capacities of women and just platform them where we can. So then women actually see that they do have a space and they can occupy spaces where policies are being made and things like that. So I think those are the concrete steps that are being taken, but there is still much more to be done.
So to zoom out a little bit and to talk about empowering Malaysian women in general, what would you say are some of the most pressing issues that are still facing women in Malaysia today?
I think for women in Malaysia, it really boils down to the few things that I think some MPs have also been bringing up and just the general public has also been pushing for. And it would be things like the Sexual Harassment Act. That's one thing that we've been trying to table this bill since last year to introduce, you know, anti-discrimination provision in the Employment Act and also to criminalize stalking. That's one. And of course, the other one would be just in terms of social welfare, because, you know, women in Malaysia traditionally have like lower savings and are susceptible to old age poverty. So that is also one thing that I think the pandemic has really exacerbated through this. And also another one I can see is child marriage. That's also an issue that we've been bringing up in gendered spaces where we want to follow our ratification of CEDAW, the Convention on Eliminating All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, where we should protect girls and from child marriages and protect their rights. So I would say these are the few things that I think are quite pertinent on the table at the moment.
So it's been just about a year since the Perikatan National Government took power. And when it comes to women's rights, then let's give a report card of sorts, right? What are the things that the government has done right? And what are the things that you think they need to work on?
Yeah, well, if I'm thinking about the things that I do applaud, like what has been done by the government so far, is that one, I did mention social welfare. So in terms of women having lower savings, that puts a lot of our women who are already economically precarious in a precarious situation. But the government did put in some funds for microfinancing under the pandemic recovery, where they assisted, like, I think women entrepreneurs. There's been an allocation of like 50 million and there are aids for single mothers. So there are those kind of stimulus packages. And I also am happy to see that there are some allocation in the last budget for like childcare facilities in both government buildings and also to incentivize private companies to do that. So in that sense, I would say there are some points where we try to pick up on in terms of economic and childcare. So yeah, so that's great.
What about in terms of things that you think they need to work on?
In terms of things they need to work on, I think it's quite similar to what I mentioned earlier. So definitely the important things like the Sexual Harassment Act, child marriage. But perhaps what I would also bring up is when we talk about how women are affected socioeconomically, that has also directly impacted the mental health of our women. And in a study by UNICEF, it did show that primarily women-hated households do endure more stress financially and emotionally, because now a lot of women not only have to take on just the care work, which has always been there, but now also have the double burden of trying to support the family economically. And and I do see this through the work that I do with this low income communities as well.
Moving forward, what do you think needs to be prioritized to mitigate the effects of the last year when it comes to women's rights and empowerment?
I think like the pandemic as a whole is actually an opportunity for us to really platform more women leadership to vocalize and respond to these kind of issues. And what we really need is more safe and meaningful participation of not just top-down approaches of women voices, but also voices from the community to advocate for their own rights and things like that. So in terms of social welfare, while we are supporting the microfinancing of women entrepreneurs, what about our housewives? What about those in the B40 community? How do we support them in terms of childcare and capacity building? And then in terms of mental health, I think one thing that was brought up was also that our Talian Kasi was not reinstated. So how do we support not just heads of households, but also young women in families? How do we support them through this mentally stressful situation? And lastly, I think really just capacity building as a whole. We see increasingly that women, young to old, can definitely benefit from more capacity building in terms of their skills and also just general governance in community and state positions. So I think those are the few things that I would see can provide a direct impact onto mitigating the crisis that we are facing at the moment.
Shuiwei, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
That was Tam Shuiwei, campaign manager at the 111 Initiative, speaking to us about the importance of creating a more gender-sensitive parliament and what that could look like, the impact it could have. If you'd like to share some thoughts, you can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.